Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What's the next issue we're going to address, folks?
Judge, it'd be the motion to limit Dr. Corcoran's testimony that we made reference to before the break.
And at some point again, Judge, if you've had the chance to review it, though, Williams' motion, we have to find out about those.
Well, Mr. Hunter has the floor right now.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. We've made a motion to limit or exclude the testimony of Dr. Joseph Corcoran. The basis of the motion, the main thrust of the motion is exclusion, and it is based on section 766.102, paren 7, for statutes. As Your Honor has heard before in this matter, section 766.102 provides for the qualifications under which testimony may be offered by an expert witness in a medical malpractice case. A threshold requirement is that the expert witness have reviewed under subsection 5 of the statute all pertinent medical records, which this witness has testified he has not done. Above and beyond that, however, and more importantly, the thrust of this motion, under section 766.102, paren 7, anyone who is testifying in a medical negligence action against a hospital or healthcare facility may give expert testimony on the appropriate standard of care or other non-clinical issues administratively if he has substantial knowledge by virtue of his or her training or experience concerning the standard of care among hospitals of the same type as the healthcare facility or hospital whose acts or omissions are the subject of the testimony and which are located in the same or similar medical communities. Now, I paraphrased the statute there, Judge, but the thrust of the statute is that the threshold substantively for the competence of an expert to testify on administrative and non-clinical matters against a hospital is the question of whether they have substantial knowledge and experience in the same type of hospital. This witness has never practiced in a children's hospital outside of medical school over 30 years ago. He has never been a CMO of a medical of a children's hospital. His experience as a CMO or senior executive official in a hospital setting comes as a result of having served as a CMO, chief medical officer, in a general hospital, not a children's hospital, a general hospital of a different type in a different medical community than all children's hospital in St. Petersburg.
He's in the room here. Can we ask the doctor to excuse?
Dr. Corcoran, if you could wait outside, please.
In any event, Judge, that's the thrust of the argument. The record has established through his deposition testimony that he's not familiar with the different levels of licensure under Florida statutes for different types of hospitals. He is not familiar with the differences in specialty as opposed to non-specialty institutions. He has no familiarity with the disease processes here at issue among pediatric patients. In fact, he's testified he's not a pediatrician. He's never been a pediatrician. He has no knowledge of the diagnosis or treatment of CRPS, the use of ketamine, or any of the other clinical issues that are at issue here. He is, by training, a osteopathic board-certified OBGYN with no pediatric credentials whatsoever, who has never practiced significantly in a pediatric hospital.
Do pediatric hospitals use a different coding system than other hospitals?
Coding system of what respect?
For billing purposes.
I'm not aware that they are, but on the other hand, he's never been provided their billing records.
Yes, he is.
Yep, he sure has.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Hunter?
Not according to his deposition. That's what we have, Judge, and the alternative part of the motion is that his testimony be limited to those matters with respect to which he can furnish familiarity. If Your Honor is suggesting that perhaps if he's properly informed regarding billing, that would be a potential exception. But as a matter of standard,
when was this deposition taken of Dr. Corcoran?
Deposition was taken Dr. Corcoran sometime recently.
August 1st, 2023.
He was the one that Your Honor let them add late at the last minute. It was taken you said August? That's probably, yeah, that sounds right.
August what?
August 1st.
And so this motion is coming in.
You get the transcript before the deadline.
Transcripts can be had in a day or two. I'm just wondering why, because we had so many of these hearings before trial. Why, when we are with lots of people here and people ready to go to testify, that we're having this conversation now as opposed to, you know, the day or the week before trial even started? Why wasn't it filed by then?
Judge, we thought we would file it at a point where we had a complete picture of what he had reviewed and we had the opportunity to put it together.
I said if the deposition was on August 1st, why wait 2 months to file the motion? The reality is you want me to make a decision, which, you know, these motions take a lot longer than the snap amount of time that I'm being given on this.
Judge, in years past, we would make this motion after voir diring the witness at the time on the witness stand.
I don't know. How many motions in limine to exclude various doctors and opinions have we had this case?
Judge, we had a number of them. We had a number of those in June, July, and July, and others in August. This doctor got deposed late. He never got a report to us till very late. And
his report was timely on June 10th, 2023.
I'm going to hear from your side in a moment. I don't know what to do, Mr. Hunter, because I feel like I'm being jammed on this. I mean, he's here, everyone's waiting, and you're asking me to make really substantive, substantial rulings on things that I would have liked to have actually had some time to think about and to, you know, read it in more detail.
Judge, I regret making you feel that way. That's not my intention. There's a number of us getting jammed about a number of things in this matter. Wow.
Mr. Whitney, what's on your side?
The relevant section of the statute is 766.
Well, first off, tell me what this doctor is going to be testifying to. Let's start fundamentally.
Well, that's probably better, Mr. Anderson's question.
He is a hospital administration expert, Your Honor. He has analyzed the rules, procedures, routines, forms, releases, and the internal documents of Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. He is offering opinions about the failure of the systems within the hospital to prevent many of the situations that happened here, including Kathy Beatty and my treatment of Maya Kowalski and the overall treatment of her through her stay. He is opining as to whether the hospital had sufficient control to advertise itself as Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital, given the fact, as just testified to by, I believe, either Dr. Perno or Napolitano, that there's absolutely no control whatsoever over them by the Baltimore company. He's also testifying about the lack of training in the first part. In the second part, she probably shouldn't have even been anywhere near Maya Kowalski in light of the memo regarding aggressive behavior and the extent to which the aggressive behavior was known and how unusual it is for the type of report that was filed against Ms. Beatty to be in a hospital, and the fact of threats of physical violence by one employee upon another are a very grave allegation in a hospital, particularly a pediatric hospital. He will testify, and thus that Ms. Beatty should have been sent back if they wanted to keep her for significant training, which they failed to do, or she should have been released, or at the very least, she should not have been put in to be whatever you want to call her towards Maya Kowalski with very little control. He's going to testify to what you heard from Dr. Perno and Dr. Napolitano, the fact that there was absolutely no real-time review or risk management of events as they happened or within close proximity of them happening sufficient to put a halt to things that were ongoing. He will testify to this was a fox guarding the hen house situation because of the way that Johns Hopkins has set up its monitoring system such that you had people who worked together all the time, if not totally, were counted on to report about each other in the event there was any violation of Johns Hopkins' internal rules. He'll testify concerning the internal policies and procedures of Johns Hopkins Ultra Women's Hospital. Instances include their elopement routine, their two or three, their minor leaving AMA routine, their failure to express the patient and family rights and comply with them in the handling of the Kowalskis. That is a summary of his testimony, and it is set forth not only in his deposition, but in his report. I'll find the date of the report. It was filed timely, as co-counsel has stated. But he filed that, and he also filed, the court may recall, an affidavit, I believe, in support of punitive damages, in which he went over many of these points, I think almost all of these points, and that affidavit is April 12, 2023, prior to the one of the final motions on that. So the defense has had an opportunity to receive a report, an affidavit, and depose him extensively, at which point he covered these issues. All of the things he's testifying to are in evidence.
If you need further on the statutory argument, please let me know.
I'm still trying to read, and that's why I say I got jammed on this one. It's, I don't know how you want me to do a quality job at making well thought out decisions without giving me the time to do it. I mean, I can make rulings, but it's, I like trying to think through what's being requested of me, get a chance to actually like read the depositions, and I'm still trying to read his report right this second.
Judge, I appreciate that. Some of the stuff that you're hearing is clearly outside of the pleadings that have been put forward. The count 11, for example, has been walked away, walked back. He's being put forward as an all-purpose expert regarding a very limited specialty hospital, and that I suppose is the point. And I apologize, but I didn't perceive that as being a matter that required that much forethought. And if that's my bad, that's my bad.
Well, if you're making the argument that he has never been the chief administrative officer of a specific children's hospital, and you're contending that that is the requirement under sub 7 of the statute for him to be qualified, is that the argument you're making?
Yes, sir. I'm making the argument that someone who's going to criticize a standard of care of a specialty hospital under the statute needs to have substantial knowledge and experience demonstrated of their ability to know and be familiar with the standard of care for the same hospital. That's the clear black letter law of the statute.
What do the cases say interpreting the statute? Since
there's very few cases that interpret this statute as opposed to the statute under 766.102 paren 5.
No.
But under 102 paren 5, the cases are very clear that it's got to be that the expert witness against or for whom a witness is testifying has to be in the same specialty. This requirement is essentially the same thing as applied to hospitals.
Your Honor, subsection 7 begins, notwithstanding subsection 5.
Considering that I wasn't given the opportunity really to think about this or review, can someone give me a case interpreting the statute so I can actually see what courts have said about this statute?
The primary case they cited, the only case they cited, is Santa Lucia versus Levine, at 198 Southern 3rd 803. And that case does not discuss, this is the relevant statute, it doesn't even discuss 766-102. It discusses a separate part of the statute under 766-103. So we don't yet have a case.
There are actually two cases we cited, Judge. Neither one of them construes this particular subsection of the statute. That's why I said what I said a moment ago. The point, however, is that under this statute, which was amended in 2013 to require the similar, it tightened the similar health care provider requirement for giving expert testimony and required expressly that you have to have an orthopedic surgeon, for example, to testify against an orthopedic surgeon.
What was the law number?
I'm sorry?
What was the law number that was the change? I mean, these are things that I would normally have done so I can actually understand what the legislature has done.
The laws of Florida citations 2013-108 and 2011-233. And I believe the latter one in 2013 is the one that tightened the seminar health care provider provisions to subsection 5.
Your Honor, if I may.
So 213-108 laws of Florida. Doesn't say what you said it says, so what's the next one?
2011.
I don't know what to do, Mr. Hunter. I don't feel like I am ready to make a decision on this issue. I feel this is way too late. I mean, if just looking at the statute, what you're saying is because he has never been a pediatric hospital administrator, he is not eligible to qualify under the statute. I think you're probably reading the statute a little too narrowly, but again, I haven't had a chance to do it. So if I have to make an on-the-fly decision, I'm going to overrule that because you know you haven't shown me any case law that would construe it that way. And if I got to make a decision without any chance of reflection, then I'm going to say no.
Judge, I would simply point out to you that this plain language of the statute requires substantial knowledge and experience with respect to the same type of hospital. That's the purpose of the statute, as obvious on its face. That's the objection we were making.
Well, I don't believe the word same is in the statute.
I'm sorry?
No.
Your Honor, it does say of the same type as the hospital in subsection 7. I wanted to clarify the factual point, which is that
same or similar communities, and he was the head of what, Brandon?
He was the head of Brandon, correct.
It's all part of Tampa Bay.
He was the chief medical officer of Brandon Hospital, which has a pediatric hospital within it. And in fact, he affiliated and collaborated with Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital in establishing the standard of care at Brandon.
Is that true?
Not to my knowledge. He certainly didn't say that in his deposition. He did testify in his deposition that at Brandon, his hospital, not him, he didn't service the contract, his hospital hired pediatric ER doctors and pediatric neonatal intensivists to come in and run portions of their hospital, but he also said that he had nothing to do with either making or servicing those contracts. So I don't construe that as assisting them in making the standard of care. If Your Honor will look at the statute, it's a matter of his having knowledge and experience in the same type of hospital and in a similar community. It's a two-pronged test. Now the similar community is wishy-washy here, but the same type of hospital
or.
Is clear. I'm sorry?
It says or, right? Not and, it says or.
It says the substantive testimony and which are located in the same or similar communities at the time of the alleged act giving rise to the cause of action.
And if you're suggesting that Hillsborough County and Pinellas County are not the same or substantially the same.
No, sir, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying that what I'm suggesting is that the same type of hospital is the primary standard here. And he has not demonstrated that level of knowledge.
So you agree it's the same community?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're only talking about
same type of hospital. And Judge, with all due respect, this objection would be perfectly appropriate at the time he offered the opinion.
Except that the court said prior deadline.
Just focusing for a moment on the or that the court points out, saying or similar communities, in addition to being the chief medical officer of Brandon and Pediatric Hospital there, and affiliate with Johns Hopkins in those efforts, he was also the division chief medical officer for HCA Far West Division, and he oversaw Sunrise Children's Hospital in Las Vegas. So Las Vegas and Tampa are substantially similar.
Now, they're in the league.
Well, they both have football teams. Both had John Gruden as a coach.
I would suggest to you that they're the similarity then.
No, I for a drink. Where else has this doctor been? Remind
me. Hospital Corporation of America.
Yeah, he's been an executive with HCA Hospital Corporation of America. In that role that I just mentioned, he was the division chief medical officer. I think he'll say he oversaw 10 hospitals in that role, and the one I mentioned was Sunrise Children's Hospital.
It's Hospital Corporation of America, the largest hospital.
I know what HCA is. Mr. Hunter, what I'm hearing is, from a factual standpoint, he may qualify even under your definition. That's about the best I can give you right now, given that I wasn't given time to prepare for this. Mr. Altenberg?
Yeah, if I may, beyond his qualifications, I'm going to be instructing my trial guys to object a lot because of the scope of the pleadings. There is no risk management claim under 766.166 expressly in count 8. Nothing in there alleged a management thing. It was diagnosis and having a treatment plan is what's in count 8. In count 14, the smorgasbord is now down to a negligent training claim only. And it only references 766.166 in paragraph, I believe it's 170, to say it's sort of like this. And so I was listening to opinions that might have been appropriate when count 11 was in, but count 11 was voluntarily dismissed. So anything about the training the background on Miss Beatty and whether she was disciplined in the past is not relevant to this.
Your Honor, as you're aware,
Yeah, let Mr. Altenburn finish, please.
I thought he was done.
But at any rate, we need to keep this within the scope of the pleadings. And it sounded from what I heard, numerous things were going beyond anything that is left at count 14, and there's no risk management claim pled in count 8 except by incorporating that which is in count 14.
Are you done?
Yes.
All right. Hold on a second.
So, Mr. Whitney, you're telling me that Dr. Corcoran, when he was an administrator with HCA, had under his constellation of hospitals a pediatric hospital?
Yes, Your Honor. And as CMO of Granite Regional Pediatric Hospital within it.
Now, how about Mr. Altenburn's point about the scope of the pleadings?
Sure. The scope of the pleadings also includes punitive damages claims. And our 76872.
On battery and false imprisonment.
Correct. And we have to show and demonstrate the ratification or active participation or condoning of these actions by management. And he can speak to all of this because of the violations of internal policies, the failure to train Catherine Beatty, which is pled, in her anger management issues, allowing her to continue over this child, leading inevitably to the battery and false imprisonment, all the other misdeeds that she committed against Maya Kowalski, as she's testified to here. So management and risk management are materially relevant to our case here. The issue of risk management not only is subject to our pleadings, but has been up to the second DCA, as the court's well aware. So the nexus between risk management and mismanagement of this hospital has all been part of this case for now 2 years.
Hold on a second, please.
Reference is being made to Ms. Beatty's prior arrest.
No,
it was not.
No, that's out. In the hospital. No.
And I think I struck that last night as well.
I understand. You did, Your Honor. I thought I saw it referenced in some of his testimony or affidavit.
That could be.
I missed. What are you arguing,
Mr. Your Honor, additionally, on the pleadings, outside of the punitive damages argument, count 8, which is the medical malpractice count, incorporated count 14, which is the negligent training, supervision, and ratification of the physicians.
No, training, not negligent training.
And in the lead up to trial, there was an agreement between Mr. Altenburn and Mr. Elligott, I believe, he'll confirm, to collapse count 14 into count 8 to avoid another jury instruction on this issue.
There was an offer, and there was never an acceptance because they never gave me jury instructions that could fit there. There's no agreement on that.
Then in that case, count 14 is still an active count. So
for negligent training only under a common law theory backed up by 766.166 and a reference to a Bill of Rights, which is a piece of material only admissible to establish a common law standard of care. There is a statutory Bill of Rights provision in the Florida statutes. It has no private right of action. It has a different penalty.
Well, we've consumed all this time. The bottom line is, I guess he's testifying, and there's going to be lots of objections, and I'm just have to do the best I can with the rulings on the fly. Are there any other motions that are going to be very substantive like this that I need to know about so I can be ready for them?
Don't we, sir, Your
Honor? Thank you.
From the plaintiffs, there will be.
Well, let's get them
we will.
Quickly because...
We will.
Well,
I guess we didn't get any exhibits, so.
Do you want to handle one or two, or you just want to? I'll leave it up to your honor.
Are they needed for this witness?
A couple of them.
If they're needed for this witness, then let's do them.
What do you need?
How do I say that?
Mr. Whitney, which one or ones are we talking about?
Just a moment, just if we could.
I'm sorry?
If we just have a moment to decide which one Mr. Anderson would like for this witness.
We don't want to argue with things that are either already in evidence or we don't need from this witness.
All right, we'd like to address Exhibit 2277, pages 245 and 246.
Let's put it up.
Recognize that there would need to be redactions. I would focus the court on paragraph number 3 in Ms. Salisbury's email regarding billing.
Judge, this is the DCF attorney writing an attorney for the hospital regarding DCF matters and things that she's concerned about.
I think it's the Kowalski's attorney.
Yes, I'm sorry. The Kowalski's attorney writing the hospital in the DCF hearing.
How are you intending on using this?
Notice, Judge.
Notice on what?
We brought to their attention, if I could. I have reviewed records indicating the child is being treated for, quote, complex regional pain syndrome, I guess this is the code, and it gives the code, medical confirmed, would like verifications. Further, I would like an explanation of what medical confirmed means. The purpose of this is to demonstrate that it was brought to the attention of the hospital during the course of this on November 11th. And it starts out a printout of the child's diagnosis.
My recollection is the hospital agrees it was billing under the CRPS. I don't think that's an issue in the case.
No, it's not an issue in the case anymore. But the timing of it is when they were notified of it and whether they continued to do it.
Okay. What does that have to do with anything?
Well, I think it would go to our fraud count regarding the billing, as to whether there would be the required clear and convincing standard on it, that it was brought to their attention. They knew what the problem was. They chose, midway through her stay, to continue to bill for CRPS.
I mean, it's to one of the lawyers here.
We were hoping to fix that, was simply to delete names and just make it to
the
defendant.
The unfair prejudice of this exhibit outweighs any probative value, even if I were to figure out a way to splice it to only get to that small paragraph.
So I understand the court.
That's out.
Pages 833 to 837. That's already in.
That's submitted.
That's already admitted. My apologies. If we have time for one more, we would like to address 2277-453. Yes.
Put it up. What is this?
That's exactly the point, Judge. It's undated notes that somebody's going to have to interpret. Nobody's going to testify as to who wrote the notes, what they mean. If somebody picked up my notes from today, they would have to interpret them and try to figure out what the heck they meant.
We can withdraw on that.
It's from the risk management file at the hospital.
Anderson just said he will withdraw.
Well, yeah, he didn't.
Yeah, then let's try the next one.
There was one of these that had Ms. Crane's note on it, and that's what I would have thought this one was. Nursing notes pull out. Nursing notes pull out. We need it for this witness.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we need it for this witness.
Does anyone need to take a break before we start? We've been here for 40 minutes, or does anyone want to take a break, or you want to get going?
I think we have time for a break if the court would like one, simply because we've got this.
I'm fine. I'm just asking the lawyers if you want one.
Well, we didn't. The defense would like a 5-minute break, Your Honor.
Let's take a 5-minute break then. Please be seated, everybody. Okay, before we bring the jury in, what witnesses are we going to have tomorrow? Plaintiffs.
Depending on the length of this testimony, we may have to push our next witness in tomorrow, which would be Jessica Blackrick. We also have Deborah Salisbury and Brian Gillis may testify tomorrow. We have a rather long deposition, relatively, of Dr. Eli Neuberger and deposition excerpts of Dr. Sally Smith. And if we can get to it, the Kowalskis will begin their damages testimony.
If I may inquire, I can't foresee what Ms. Salisbury or the other attorney, I've forgotten his name, could possibly testify to this action that's not going to invade what went on at DCF. So if we could get a proffer from the plaintiff so I know what to prepare for.
Especially with Ms. Salisbury. So what's Ms. Salisbury going to testify to?
I wish I had my notes in front of me. I know she's been instructed not to get into anything involving the DCF matter, but she was involved in sending warnings to the hospital about certain behaviors. And so, again, it goes to the notice to the hospital that Kathy Beatty was acting out as against Mike Kowalski. I wish I had my notes here.
And she can also speak to the factual scenario of the Morris transfer that we've heard a lot about.
Yes, that's right. Sorry.
Well, the first area of inquiry I would think would be entirely both duplicative and potentially privileged. If she's going to come in and say, as the attorney for one of the Kowalskis, I was sending warnings.
Well, I mean, it's not your privilege to be concerned about.
Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Williams.
It's not only that, Judge. These matters were squarely in front of Judge Hayworth in the dependency action. She was dealing with Judge Hayworth in the dependency action. And the matters that are being alluded to were brought to Judge Hayworth's attention in that dependency action and dealt with at that time. So this is a matter, once again, of us going into to matters that were before the dependency court that are not only duplicative of what we've heard already, but also were before Judge Hayworth and subject to his jurisdiction at the time.
Well, obviously, if it's talking about the dependency court, I'll shut it down, just like I've been on everything else.
We have big red lettered things, don't ask this, don't get into this, on our desk.
But, I mean, if there's a notice that's separate and apart from what was transpiring within the dependency court, perhaps that is relevant. Maybe it's cumulative, maybe not. Until I hear it, I won't know.
And who is the other gentleman that they're having coming in for?
Brian Gillis. He would be similar.
Was he the attorney for DCF?
He was an attorney for DCF at the time.
And what is he going to be testifying to?
Again, Judge, off the top of my head, you remember Mr. Gillis.
One issue would be the issue that arose with Catherine Beattie's email that we tried to have admitted and the factual assertion that there was a delegation.
The email you sustained?
Yes, sustained it with the additional instruction that the defense could try to prove up a delegation.
I think it's also important to note that I do not believe Mr. Gillis was actually working on the Kowalski dependency case, and he is currently Deborah Salisbury's practice partner.
Was he the DCF attorney at the time?
I would defer to Mr. Whitney on that. My understanding was he may have worked for DCF, but he was not staffing the Kowalski case.
This is the point, Judge. Yeah, we don't. All right, we have no information to suggest that he has any involvement in this case, except to the extent that he used to work for DCF back then, but had no knowledge or involvement in this case. So when he's been injected in the case before, it's been offering opinions about what DCF should have done or what should have been done in this situation, like a de facto expert of some sort, but yet he's never been listed as such, and he has no personal knowledge of events here that we're aware of.
Are we calling him for the dependency action? Because you know that's not happening.
I know that is not happening.
So what is he being called to say?
Without my notes, I can't tell you specifically, but I will reevaluate whether we can call him and take any risk with it. Honestly, Judge, I've been concentrating trying to get ready for this witness and get things going and dealing with their motion.
Have we turned over the exhibits that we're going to use tomorrow?
Yes, Kelly Perry takes care of that. Can we check and ensure Kelly Perry is?
Yes, they were sent at 12:01.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Hunter?
Well, two other matters. One is, I really would like to hear some explication of what we're doing with Mr. Gillis, because otherwise we're floundering around all night trying to figure out what this guy's going to say with no indication of what he, in fact, is going to be proffered for and just wasting a lot of time. And then the second thing is, did I hear Jessica Stevens on the list for tomorrow?
Jessica Blackring.
She is with the Guardian Ad Litem program, but we don't know what she's being proffered for. And if it's a Williams rule situation, we're going to have...
It's not Williams rule.
Okay. So for those two witnesses, why don't we have a discussion after the jury leaves, before the lawyers leave, so we know. This way, somebody, if your law partner can scan your notes and send them to you, way we can have a more intelligent discussion before everyone leaves here today, so we can be more targeted and focused tomorrow.
I understand. Oh, one other thing for the record, Judge. When I said withdraw to 453, that is the last exhibit that we were discussing there. I think it was 277 453. That That's was
the
just
one with words all over the place.
Say again.
It's the one with words all over the place.
Yes, we weren't withdrawing that completely forever. We were simply withdrawing it for the purposes of this witness.
Okay. Judge, I apologize for this request, but I've looked at their redacted exhibit, and I didn't take the best of notes. And can I ask the court to look at it to make sure that it's in conformance with the court's ruling? I don't know about the other one. You only gave me the one.
The top two are fine. The bottom one, and just so the transcript's clear, I'm looking at 2277-630A and 631A. The bottom one looks like what I said this morning, but without being able to compare it to the one I actually ruled on. But it looks
628, 629.
What?
Would you like me to publish the other one?
I mean, if you could pull up the other one, but I think so I can see the underlying, but I think this is what I said.
Would you like to see 628, 629, or the other ones?
If I could see the original without the A, the 628 without the A.
Got it. Just a moment.
But Ms. Quarles, this does look.
I wasn't suggesting it wasn't, Judge. I just wasn't clear and didn't want it going in.
Just a moment.
This conforms with what I ruled earlier today.
All right. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Anything else, or can we bring the jury in?
I'd like to proceed.
Let's bring in the jury.
Yes,
welcome, members of the jury. Please be seated. Did you have a good lunch?
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct? And I want to confirm while you're away, you reviewed a whole bunch of media about this case. Nope, great. Has anyone approached you about this case since you were last with us?
No.
Mr. Anderson, your next witness, please.
May I please the court? I'd like to call Dr. Joseph Corcoran.
You stand here, face the clerk, and raise your hand.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give over the truth, the whole truth, and nothing
else. I do.
Hi. Can you please state your name for the record?
Yes, sir. I'm Joseph Corcoran.
MD?
DO.
DO. And where do you live?
I live in Tampa, Florida.
And have I asked you here as an expert in hospital administration to advise the jury on your review of the policies and procedures at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital during the relevant period?
Yes, you have.
I'd like you to give the jury the background, a little bit of your background training and experience for offering opinions here today, particularly your, why don't I let you start?
Good afternoon. So I'm Joe Corcoran. I am an OBGYN by background. After finishing my residency in Philadelphia, I practiced in Sarasota for about 12 plus years, from 1991 to 2003. I'm board certified by the American College of OBGYN. I spent my first 3+ years working for a large practice. In March of 1995, I started my own practice with the idea of keeping it small and boutique-y. That didn't last very long, and the practice actually grew fairly quickly. By the end of my term with the practice, I believe that we had 3 physicians, 3 nurse midwives, and 4 nurse practitioners serving a variety of offices, one of which was here in Venice. The main one was in Sarasota near Doctors Hospital. In 2003, shortly after I became a dad, I had what should have been routine back surgery. There were complications after the back surgery that ended my clinical career. I was unable to continue to stand, bend, lift, twist. Obstetrics is a fairly physically demanding specialty, even though the babies are fairly small. So it took about 2 years for me to get better. And I did that recuperation at home in Sarasota. In 2006 or 7, I started a business education master's program at University of Florida in the Warrington College of Business. I graduated with a master's of science in entrepreneurship and innovation. Shortly after graduation, I was recruited to a healthcare think tank in Washington, D.C., known as the Advisory Board. It's been around since the early 70s and is now part of Optum Healthcare. I joined in November of 2008. My first day on the job was the day before we elected Barack Obama as president. So it was really kind of neat to have a front row seat to the development of the Affordable Care Act. I had nothing to do with the legislation. We actually helped hospitals and large medical groups know how to change in this new paradigm. I was with the advisory board through the beginning of 2013. At the end of 2012, just prior to the election between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, I was asked to deliver an address at the Longboat Key Club in Sarasota, talking about what would a second term of Obama versus a first term of Romney look like for healthcare. There were some executives from HCA in the audience. A conversation started that evening that ultimately led to them offering me the opportunity to work with HCA Healthcare. HCA Healthcare is a for-profit hospital company. It is currently has about 180 hospitals, I believe, in 20 or 22 states. So I was offered the opportunity to become the chief medical officer of Brandon Regional Hospital in suburban Tampa. It's about a 350, 400-bed hospital at the time. I was in that role from 2013 until 2018.
Did Brandon, I'm sorry to interrupt, did Brandon have pediatrics as well?
Brandon always had a pediatric capability. But during my tenure, we actually developed what we referred to as a hospital within the hospital, so that we had a dedicated pediatric emergency department that had a separate entrance from the adult emergency department. And we had a dedicated floor for pediatric patients, including a pediatric ICU. And, of course, being a heavy OB hospital, we always had a neonatal unit as well for newborns.
Please continue from there.
Thank you. So in the fourth quarter of 2018, based on some progress that I had a hand in at Brandon Regional, I was given the opportunity to assume a larger role within the company. And for better or for worse, that included a move out west. I became the division chief medical officer for the Far West Division, which has responsibility for about 35 cares of site total, but five acute care hospitals in the state of California, three acute care hospitals in Las Vegas, Nevada, including Sunrise Hospital, which is about 800 beds today. If I'm not mistaken, the Sunrise Children's Hospital, which again has a separate entrance and a separate emergency department, accounts for 206 of those beds. I was in that role for about 3 years, including when the nation learned about COVID. One of our hospitals in the Silicon Valley actually had patient number two in the whole country. So we were kind of winging it. We were figuring it out. And a lot of what we did in managing the early cases in California and some in Nevada actually set the foundation for how the rest of the company managed COVID across as it spread from the West Coast. I was in that role for about 3 years. I left the role because, quite simply, it came down to a job that I loved and a family that I adored. My wife and my two kids were never able to move out west, so I was commuting about 2,000 miles, 5 hours by air. My kids are my world, so that became unsustainable. So at the end of 2021, I moved back east. And in the early part of 2022, I accepted an opportunity to step away from full-time service to HCA Healthcare and take on the opportunity to serve interim roles. So they would drop me in basically as a consultant, and I would work, 3 months at a time, engaged at a specific hospital trying to address more specific problems.
So did Sunrise Hospital, can you elaborate a little more on what your job duties were there at HCA in the Western Division? And particularly, Terry would like to know about Sunrise Hospital and the other pediatric units that you were involved in.
Yeah, so Sunrise Hospital is a very large safety net hospital. As I said, it's over 800 beds today. The night of the 1 October shooting, you may remember where there was a sniper at the Mandalay Bay Hotel. The night of that shooting, 100 patients were taken to the county hospital, the old Clark County General, which ultimately became University Medical Center. They accepted 100 trauma patients and then shut off and went on divert. Our hospital emergency room took over 350 patients in that night. We always felt that we had to be there for the community. So it was very much a safety net hospital. It was, really kind of, it was off the strip. It was not the glamorous part of Las Vegas. The children's hospital, and Mr. Anderson, I want to make it clear, as the division chief medical officer, I had a facility chief medical officer at Sunrise,
okay,
who really was more responsible for the day-to-day operations.
Did he report to you or she?
He did.
Yes, sir. Reported,
yes, sir,
to you?
Yes, sir.
All right. So you were over the administrator there in terms of problem solving and operational decisions?
So my focus was always on clinical quality and patient safety. That really is job one for a chief medical officer. So I want to make clear, I was not over the entire leadership. There was a CEO who really ran responsibility for the hospital. My job was to support, lead, direct the chief medical officer at the facility, who also had the responsibility for clinical care and quality. Safety,
And you said you're married. How long have you lived in Sarasota? setting aside your trip out west.
So I moved to Sarasota in the summer of 1991 after finishing my residency. I was a little bit of a slow learner. I didn't get to meet my wife until 1998, so I was single for a long time. And I lived on Siesta Key for most of that time. I met Patty in 1998. We got engaged in 1999. We got married in 2000. So we've been married a little bit over 23 years now.
And is she involved in business as well?
Yes, sir, she is. When I met her, she was helping her mom and dad run El Greco Cafe, which was a Greek restaurant down on Main Street in Orange in downtown Sarasota. And it's funny, I actually remember sitting at the intersection waiting for the light to change and saw the logo that said, you know, where it was Greek cuisine, where Athens meets Sarasota. And I thought I wouldn't even know what to order if I ever walked in. Little did I know that I would end up marrying Patty just a couple years later. She now works with her sister and our nephew, and they have started a new chain of restaurants called The Breakfast Company. There's one in the Landings. There's one on State Road 70. And soft grand opening was yesterday for the new site across from UTC Mall.
So how did you, lack of a better term, get this gig? How did I find you to advise the jury on these issues?
So one of my longtime friends is Steve Heese. Steve is someone that I met during the Reagan administration when I was doing my residency in Philadelphia. Steve is a very smart businessman. He ultimately went on to be one of the owners of Chris Craft Boats.
This is irrelevant as invoking third parties who are not parties to this. I bet they do.
I'll speed it up, Your Honor.
You knew Steve Heese and...
I knew Steve Heese. We had dinner. Our wives are friends, so the four of us were having dinner. Steve actually knew Greg as his chief counsel, I believe, for Chris Craft Boats.
Sustained.
That's all I had on that, actually. I'm not completed.
Why don't you let him finish? Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Finish the credentials
portion. Okay. All right. So in terms of operating hospitals and in advising the jury on your opinions here today, tell the jury about your practical experience in evaluating the operations of hospitals and noting where there are issues that must be resolved.
So it started my involvement in assessing and helping hospitals run smarter actually began when I was in practice. I was on the medical executive committee of Doctors Hospital in Sarasota for 4 years. I was elected as the chief of staff, but my surgical complications did not allow me to fulfill that role. After graduation from business school, as I said, I was recruited to the advisory board, which was a think tank and a consultancy. So my roles involved going to health systems, hospitals, and large medical groups, giving them business insights about how to work in this new Affordable Care Act paradigm primarily. And then for HCA, as I said, I was a chief medical officer at Brandon, which was about a 375-bed hospital, which has subsequently grown, and then had responsibility for about 3,500 beds all total between California and Nevada in my role as division chief.
And can you explain how HR, if you will, played a role, whether you were either directly involved or over and making decisions in terms of the HR departments in these different hospitals?
So I didn't have any direct responsibility for the HR department, but I did have leadership responsibility or executive accountability for the medical staff office, and that was a responsibility that I shared with my CEO. I had direct responsibility for the quality department, and I had a vice president of quality who headed up that department and had maybe half a dozen to a dozen members on her team. I also oversaw a couple of other organizations, including computer physician order entry.
Were you involved in some of your roles in the development of hospital policy on various topics?
Yes, sir. So I didn't write the policy, but we met with the folks who did. That typically was somebody with a legal degree, so that we made sure that we wrote it the right way. But yes, I was involved in those conversations as they applied to clinical quality and patient safety primarily.
And some of the different policies and procedures that we will discuss here today, have you been directly involved or overseen the direct involvement in the development and management of those policies?
Well, not the policies that we'll look at today, but policies like that as they applied to
hospitals. But,
yes, sir.
But in other hospitals.
Yes, sir.
And then in terms of your as chief medical officer in Brandon Regional Hospital, then, can you explain your role in terms of overseeing or developing and or developing hospital policy and procedures of the type that we'll be discussing here today?
Yes, sir. So, for instance, one of the things that we did, aside from just writing policy, was actually working on performance improvement. So, for instance, shortly after I started at the hospital in the early part of 2013, we participated in an effort to improve how we were doing with sepsis, which is an overwhelming bacterial infection. When I joined the hospital, if you were diagnosed with septic shock, there was a 44% chance that you would die rather than be discharged home. That was unacceptable from a clinical perspective. Average nationally is about 30%. Before the end of the year, we actually worked as a team, and I had a part in leading that team. We worked as a team to put in new procedures based on what evidence and data showed us was the right path. We created guardrails for our clinical teams to stay between.
What's a guardrail?
That's my term for it. We said, you know, look, the data and evidence says that this is acceptable and this is acceptable, and there's a range, right? So I think about it as guardrails, and we leave which lane to be in. We leave that up to the physician based on their knowledge, their skill, their education, their judgment. But we know that if you stay between the guardrails, the data and the evidence points us to the patient is more likely to get the favorable outcome that they want and we want for them. So we were able to lower our mortality rate from 44% to 24%. And we maintained that performance for several years in the mid to low 20s.
And can you explain your involvement with the standards that you'll be speaking about today? They're called CMC or CMA?
CMS?
CMS standards.
Yeah, so, lawyers frequently talk about standards of care, and that's a legal definition about what is expected a physician to do when treating whatever.
Sure.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack, craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. By American players, for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
¿Por qué siempre es un caos cuando nos juntamos?
Porque nadie planea nada, bro. Menos mal que la Rogue está lista para eso.
Yeah, lluvia, tierra, lo que sea. Con all-wheel drive disponible y 5 modos de manejo, we're still outside.
Y también tiene power. ¿Ese turbo?
El torque está durísimo. Más torque que cualquier motor de gasolina en su clase.
La Rogue no relaja. Y mira el espacio. Merch on merch, gear, mics, todo cabe.
Load up. We out.
La 2026 Nissan Rogue hecha para todo.
Segmentación de Auto Pacific 2026 Nissan Rogue versus los últimos competidores en el mercado dentro de la categoría XSUV Mainstream Midsize Class, excluyendo vehículos eléctricos, basado en los sitios web del fabricante.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better, and that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.